performance artist. Heraclitus Hir Vernon wowed us back in 2004 at the last live Feast of Fools show. Titled The Triple Xmas Spectacular, The Nut to Butt Cracker Holiday Extravaganza, Heraclitus had us on the edge of our seats by performing in a fragile gingerbread house dress covered in frosting and gumdrops. Shortly thereafter, when we launched the podcast, Heraclitus was among our first guests.
Since then, our frosted friend has gone through an extraordinary journey. Z got a master's degree in art therapy and now identifies as non-binary with the preferred pronoun of Z. Today, Heraclitus Hir Vernon talks about Joseph Campbell's hero's journey as seen in Greek mythology and films like Star Wars and ties it into the process of gender self-discovery.
Plus, how to land the love of your life while on your own path to happiness.
And a look at our dear friend, video blogging pioneer, Victoria Lamar.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Thank you. Unlock a delicious world of podcasting magic and listen to thousands of amazing shows at feastoffun.com/plus.
Oh, yes.
I'm sorry. I'm not giving you any money, Salvation Army.
Why are you ringing those bells here?
I'm dressed in red. I mean, I'm in yellow.
You're kind of a little bit off season there with the yellow, but it looks cute on you.
I mean, I wear yellow every day.
Yeah. Because you're been piss queen? Is that what's going on?
I know. Isn't that that's horrible? Piss king?
Piss king?
A piss person? I actually do have a piss kink, but no, that is not why I'm wearing yellow.
Why are you wearing yellow?
I'm wearing yellow for a bunch of different reasons. And it's actually kind of changed the first reasons that I did decide to wear yellow. So it's now become a larger prayer, I think, is the best way to describe it.
Well, prayer is you say something over and over again, hoping it's going to come true. Right. Let what is the Catholics do? Let there be earth and heaven, blah, blah, blah. To do it on earth as it is in heaven, heaven, right?
Yes.
It's to bring an idea of goodness and perfection or things working out the way you want them to in your everyday life. And by saying it over and over again, hopefully it'll come true. And the reason you wear yellow is because you want money and urine. what is it? Gold.
Aztecs with it.
Is it, are you serious? Like with the, there's a reason.
The prayer part is the ritual and repetition and maybe the structure. Like, I guess I mean prayer by the ritual and the structure.
But what are you inviting?
Of a meditation.
What is it that you want to happen?
Well, the yellow was part of the solar plexus in the chakra, which is right below your lungs. And the solar plexus chakra works on your personal power, your confidence, your drive. It's kind of like your inner sun.
Well, we used to have a guest of the show who would tap her thymus.
To release energy.
To release energy. And that's their communication center of your body.
Yeah.
So
a
lot of Eastern philosophers have this idea of the chakras, which are centers of your body that when stimulated... It brings in things into your life. Mark, what's the sex chakra? Where is that?
It's green because as long as you've got a pussy, you've got money in your wallet.
It's red. It's the root chakra. Well, because
I'm sorry. Did I get that wrong?
Yeah, I do energy work. So I do shamanic Reiki, which is energy work. And the energy work, it's actually... we all have these energy... portals or wheels, and sometimes they can get blocked. Yeah. And if you unblock them, then you might just change your life around because you just
like blowing your nose.
And so the yellow is like personal.
That's not out.
So yellow, right. Wearing the yellow is a way for you to engage your personal empowerment.
Definitely.
It's to give you courage.
To give me courage to work with some pretty dark subject matter in my in my artwork.
So we're going to get to that in a second. I have to introduce our guest.
Hi.
Our guest today is an artist who thinks of self-care and self-pleasure as a form of creative expression. In the past, our guest was a contributor to our live show, The Feast of Fools, Triple Xmas Explosion.
The last one we did.
The last one we ever did. The Nut to Butt Cracker, where under the name Heather Marie Vernon created this gorgeous gingerbread dress. If you guys want to go to our website, feastoffun.com, you can see a lot of photos of the Nut to Butt Cracker, where we had a lot of gender nonconforming drag queens, comedians, musicians recreating the Nutcracker. And the artist, formerly known as Heather Marie Vernon, dressed up in this brilliant, delicious, edible dress out of gingerbread.
Right.
Since then, you go by a new name, which is Heraclitus Heer Vernon.
Right. Heraclitus.
Heraclitus.
Or you can say Heraclitus. That's if you really want to drop a bomb on people and get them all giggling.
But what is the correct way to pronounce
it? Heraclitus.
Heraclitus.
Yeah.
And is it related to the clitoris?
It's such a good story. Which is that I named myself or renamed myself when I was transitioning to Heraclitus, because Heraclitus is the pre-Socratic philosopher who said that you never step into the same river twice, because the river is always flowing, the river is always moving, which means extreme fluxism and metaphysical philosophy. So it was a great kind of marker for me for my own change.
Because you're the same person, but it's a different river? Or is
I'm not the same person.
No.
I'm never the same person. Mm. And even the person I was like a second ago, I'm now a new person, really, essentially.
Yeah, who are you?
I don't know. Hi.
You're a stranger.
I just got here.
Well, so the idea is
Welcome to my home.
Hi.
It's to see every moment in your life as with fresh set of eyes.
Right. Which is pretty psychedelic. It's pretty psychedelic. That metaphysical.
It's trippy.
It's very trippy.
Because we get so tied into, like, this is who I am and that's what I'm always going to be. Mm-hmm. And we get stuck in our own little boxes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how vision works. The world that we see around us, like if you look at this delicious Starbucks coquito flavored frappuccino.
Right.
You're not actually looking at it with your like a camera would with a photograph.
Right.
Your brain is creating this picture based on memory. And there's been all this kind of scientific experiments. And, you know, you've done that little trick where you put where you can make objects disappear.
Right.
If you just close one eye and move the deer with the little dot. You know, there's all these optical illusions that do that to illustrate that. The world around us is not built necessarily on what it is, but our mind is constructing it based on memory.
Right.
And so when we want to see things with a fresh set of eyes, it's sometimes really hard to do so because the mind is such a powerful tool in constructing images for us. And so as artists, as creative people, when we want to sort of like break out of those ruts that we're stuck in, it's sometimes important to remember that the way you see things isn't necessarily the way things are.
Right. And actually, I took a neuroscience class about, I really wanted to understand why I was stuck in certain aspects of my life. I wanted to understand why I was in pain. I wanted to understand why I couldn't change. And then I wanted to understand when I did change, how things changed in my life and I was happier. So I took a neuroscience class to understand how the brain works in terms of neuroplasticity. And that's neurons that fire together, wire together. So here's this, you know, that's a great example because, you know, saying, oh, this is a frappuccino, although it looks like a glass of water to me. But,
well,
you know,
hello,
isn't a
the
frappuccino?
Theater of radio.
It's the theater.
We're pretending.
It's the theater of water. Water that's many things. So, yeah, we are many things.
Yes.
And there's all those senses, too, that have their own sense memory, too. But what I learned was that if you want to change yourself, all you have to do is start changing the way you think, and change what you do and change your actions. And because I realized that, I was able to let go of like pain and trauma and recreate myself. And I did this like ad infinitum with my artwork. I must have about 400 videos online if you're interested in my YouTube residency I did in 2011. Mm-hmm. So I have 400 videos online. And then my Vimeo is also, I have a Vimeo, which is sexual theory practice, where I have about 40 videos. And then I have another Vimeo for Heraclitus. And I also have a website, Heraclitus. So if you're interested in looking at how I was changing myself to try and change the inside. So going back to, uh-huh. Yeah, that's, I'm more interested now in who am I becoming in this moment, rather than who I once was.
You talk a lot about it's really important to be conscious of what you're saying, because in some ways we're inviting trouble when we speak ill of ourselves or others and the world around us. And you were telling me that.
Yeah.
You actually have a lot of compassion for President Trump.
Oh, no, we're going to go there.
Because you feel like he's a very dark, sad human being who is invited a lot of this toxicity into his life.
Okay, can I explain what I mean by...
Yes, please do. Take all the time you need.
Okay. Yeah. So what's been shown to me is that since I do energy work, and we're all energy... So what I've been shown is that our thoughts are very powerful and they manifest our reality. So the thoughts we have, positive or dark thoughts, actually manifest in our future reality. So you want to change your life? You want to have a different life? Start thinking about it right now. Start feeling those feelings now. And that is how you make your dreams come true. You want to be in fear? Then fear is right outside your door. It's
that's
right
there.
That's
prayer in a nutshell. That's what a witch casts a spell. It's usually saying like, bring me the gold. You know, so that's what a song lyrics is. You know,
it is.
It's a name. Every person has a name. Mm-hmm. And when you say that person's name, you're invoking, you're asking for the world to treat that person or to love that person in a specific way. That's why so many people's name, like the name Theodore, is adoring God. My name actually means to be lucky. And Mark means to fuck shit up and win.
What's his name? Mars, the god of war.
There we go. And Heraclitus is the wandering philosopher who's also the empath. And he said that we should go into the woods to wander, get lost, to find ourselves. And we should also weep for others. So he really believed that we should have crying time where we just cry, which is also Tonglin, which is kind of a Buddhist thing. I'm a pantheist. But what I don't think that President Trump is dark. I think that he's unhappy right now.
He's sad.
He's unhappy. And I do have compassion for everyone. And even Donald Trump. I do care about that soul.
But don't you kind of want him to be unhappy? Because if he was happy, he'd be doing really horrible things to the world right now, wouldn't he?
You know,
well, he's already doing horrible things to the world.
Yeah, but
he's already doing horrible
things. But he's unhappy because he can't do more horrible things to the world.
Well, what worries me is like, it's like Hitler was, you know, went to art school and was a vegetarian. You know, that's what worries me is that kind of mentality of like, there is a very narcissistic, egotistical, sadistic quality to the artist.
Hitler was also a methamphetamine addict, and you know, a lot of those people have delusions of grandeur. You know, they think they're better than everybody else.
That's a good place. Yeah. That's a good place to talk about my film too.
Which film is that?
I am not.
It's called Heraclitus. Oh. Heraclitus or Heraclitus. And I first was interested in Lilith, the dark feminine, and creating... actually, I was creating a hero. The fantasy of a hero really appealed to me to step into this Lilith, dark feminine... very powerful feminine. Do you know about Lilith, you guys?
Lilith, the first woman.
Yep. So she was actually made from...
Are you talking about in the Bible? Or the,
yeah.
She ran away. She didn't want anything to do with Adam. She's like, no.
Yeah. Oh, really? Adam actually made two with chicks.
And that's why there's like the Lilith Fair was that, female-centric music festival because it was about women.
Yeah. God made Lilith out of not so clean dirt or clay. So Adam's just perfect.
Isn't dirt by definition dirt?
I know, can we talk about that a little bit? So anyway, she wasn't as clean, and that was the perfect, woman
too
for
hot
Adam.
For her.
But I think what happened with Lilith is Lilith would not submit to Adam, and she also wanted Adam to submit to her. So there's a power relationship. And so Adam did not let Lilith fuck him. Basically. So she went to the underworld to fuck demons because she's like, I'm fine with fucking demons.
So Adam had 99 problems.
And that bitch was one of them.
I didn't know about this. Yeah. That's the very beginning of Genesis, to get to Christian mythology.
So, he would have just been addicted to porn after that. So instead, God made Eve
out of his rib.
Out of his
rib. So he'd be more like him.
Right. Fucking himself. But it's not gay, right?
I bet you a dildo out of your rib.
Basically. But Lilith's the coolest. Lilith is the shit.
She's the rebel.
Yeah, because she's like, I can go fuck demons.
She's off the earth.
I can fuck demons.
Those demons have some good cocks, too.
Well, she's also like, if you can fuck demons, you're obviously... You're on another level.
Yeah, you got.
You're on another level.
You can do it.
And
so
God
you're working
went,
on
yeah.
a, kind of a full length video called "I Am Not I."
Or no.
Okay. You told me earlier you were.
That's a performance series.
It's a performance series.
I Am Not I, based on this writing by Virginia Woolf, okay. And that's a separate thing.
Okay.
I'm wearing yellow to work with dark subject matter. Definitely exploring. My own mental illness, my struggles with complex PTSD and being neurodivergent, and identifying sources like Virginia Woolf that just really speak to me. So her writing really speaks to me. So that's a performance series that I've been doing, I Am Not I. I do a lot of different things. So in the meantime, I was working on this Lilith series, and it led to a piece called Herotica. And that was... it's a beautiful piece, but it's a little too erotic for a regular art audience. So I'm still working on that work. But I thought what I needed was to step into a heroic figure to kind of go on a Lilith journey myself. And it ended up that, we don't really need another hero, right? Even though I was following this Joseph Campbell's hero's journey in this film, I completely divert from whatever crazy idea that was to be an anti-hero. Because I do think what we need is an anti-hero. What we need is not heroicism. We don't need heroes, actually. We need community. But we do need people to be actualized, know who they are. So the journey of like me going out in the woods as Heraclitus to go wander and find myself...
When we first met you, you presented as female, you were assigned female at birth.
Yeah.
You built this very feminine, very gorgeous gingerbread dress.
I did do that.
That people were able to sort of nibble and eat.
My butt, which was covered in like gumdrops and pimples
delicious.
It was delicious.
I actually had some
edible
of the candy.
Art. I know.
And I was a little bit, had a little bit of trepidation because I didn't know where these cookies come from. You're like, get these cookies, mama.
Where do these cookies come from?
I didn't know the cookies would taste good, but it is cookies.
It is. The body.
So I had some and the audience kind of devoured you. So by the end of the evening, you were sort of like naked, covered in frosting and
this
crumbs.
Does tend to happen. I think as a performer, I've been doing that, just stripping myself, but then also the audience will devour me.
That's part of your
I definitely
pleasure.
Was inviting that.
Yeah.
And then after a while, you're like, well, who am I? And
in some ways, did your art sort of spark a conversation with you about your gender identity?
It did. I was actually in a relationship with someone who was trans, but not ready to come out as trans, and having a really hard time about it. And of course, I was making space for them to be trans, and I was saying, "No, you should meet with a gender therapist." And you know, I will support you in this journey. And I was making so much space, hashtag codependence, for this person that I didn't realize how much I was trans until a relationship ended. And then I was like, what have I been doing? And then, yeah, my life changed after
So you were in a relationship with this person who assigned, they were assigned what exactly at birth?
Male at birth.
So they were male at birth.
Yeah.
And so they were trying to explore what their real gender identity was.
Yeah, I think.
And so in a lot of ways, you were encouraging them. You were sort of nurturing them.
Do you think that was part of the attraction to this person?
Absolutely. I think I've always been attracted to very gender fluid people and them to me. And that sometimes it's actually been painful. And other times it's been really great because it's just taught me more about the complexity of gender. So, you know, yes, I'm gender fluid, but it's more like I'm gender complex. And when I started transitioning, I was more interested in experimenting. I'm more of like a gender pirate, you know? I'm a pioneer. And now that I'm on the other side, where I made a decision, I was taking HRT for a year, and then I made a decision, oh, here, I'm at the place where I want
to
be.
To clarify that's a hormone replacement therapy, and so you were taking
testosterone
injections
mm-hmm.
on a
mm-hmm.
weekly basis?
Every week, yeah.
For a
Every
year.
Friday.
So Friday was tea day.
Or, yeah, jerking off day. No, I'm not lying. It was just such a surge. Testosterone is a drug.
What, were you looking forward to it? On
you just had a maniacal little laugh there.
It was crazy.
Some people say it's like that first shot of hormones. They say, you know, whether it's estrogen or testosterone, they say, oh, my God, this is what I've been missing my whole life. Was that the experience for you? Or you're saying it was more, you're describing it as crazy.
Yeah, I think.
It was chaotic.
It was definitely a reminder of what I knew I had. So I kind of knew the testosterone aspects of my personality, but I just didn't know how angry I was that I wasn't a man. And then when I was starting to transition, I made those decisions. Oh, do I want to keep taking testosterone, and do I want to become a man, or am I interested in the space in between? And by doing that, I think I softened and became, I think, a little, you know, a lot more. I calmed down, even though testosterone gave me so much energy. And the anger went away. So if there's like I think as a woman, I was really angry. I was really angry, but I was not, and I was angry at myself for sure. But it's that kind of like, you know, feeling as though you need that phallus. And then I did spend 3 years, like, as a sex worker, really, you know, really with the phallus, being Lilith, being that character. And when I took testosterone, it was just going to be great. I was going to have all these lovers. I thought, this is excellent. This is just going to add dimension to what I already do, because I specialized in prostate massage and strap-on, and that was just full throttle Lilith, fucking demons, basically. And it was beautiful work. It was beautiful work. But once I transitioned, I was like, hell no. And something softened in me, and I started to be less sexual and more spiritual. That's
what surprised
happened.
You.
I had no idea that was going to happen.
What is your gender identity at this point?
I identify as non-binary and gender fluid.
Are those the same thing, or how is one different than the other?
I think they're different, but I think I say both because obviously that's where that is. Mm-hmm. The gender fluidity is, it means, you know, it's complex and it's fluctuating, dipping in and out of gender. And I like to pretend I'm a bird a lot of the time. That was part of the film, was that
like
I wanted to be a bird.
Like a little bird.
I want to be a crow now. I thought I wanted to be a bower bird, but now I realize I want to be a crow. In the end of my film, I really want to be a crow. And, of course, I'm going to work this through in the puppet show. You guys don't know about the puppet show, but the puppet show is going to happen. And it's where I basically talk with these crows.
Yeah.
These two crows, and I tell them, oh, don't do that.
Yeah, don't bang on the mic.
Well, that's the crow claws. They're coming out. So I only have a beak now. I got to remember that. But yeah, no, the crows look at me and they're like, you can't be a crow. And I'm like, why not? You don't understand. I need to be a crow. And they retell all these times they saw me as a child, like tending for birds and all the beautiful metaphysical experiences I had with birds at a young age. I used to make graves for birds and sing to them when they died. And I really had this incredible, like, in dreams, I was a bird. And so, yeah, in the end, I shouldn't really spoil it, but, yeah, you can't be a bird.
But, you know...
but you can pretend.
One thing that you're talking about here is something I observe a lot in people who self-identify as homosexual, is that you fall in love with something so much, you can't decide whether you want to love it or be it.
Right, no, I know. I definitely went through that.
And it's like, you know, and I noticed this, especially with like, male bodybuilders, there's this homoeroticism and they look at like someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger or Lee Haney or, these famous iconographic, bodies that they start stepping back and they're like, you know, am I gay?
Right.
And I'm like, well, I'm gay for Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, this ideal that is so far off in this pantheon in Olympus, this realm of perfection that is nowhere part of my earthly realm, my day-to-day experience, that normally I'm heterosexual, I'm having sex with women, I'm developing relationships with women, but if I had my ideal relationship, it would be with this impossible, unattainable image of what a male body can be.
And it would be a crow for me. See,
and
you're
you
so smart. You figured it out. Well, I do think that the crow and the bird represent kind of a spiritual journey.
Sure.
For sure. It's an unattainable thing.
Why a crow, though, and not like, you know, a canary or something?
Why
that specific?
Crows are smart.
Because they're smart. So you're attracted to their intelligence.
And they also started talking to me. I had some amazing experiences with crows up on the top of the mountain.
Because they were not so nice in Dumbo.
Well, they hold crow court.
Or in The Wiz.
Yeah, The Wiz, they were mean as hell. They were like bullying Michael Jackson.
I wonder if crows have a podcast.
Yeah.
They can make tools.
It sounds like this.
They remember people, too.
They remember people.
They do.
Yeah.
And they'll tell other crows, hey, that guy over there, he has a shotgun. He doesn't like crows. And so they help each other out.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. They memorize your face.
What do crows think of scarecrows?
That's a good crows thing. So, yeah, actually, I think there was also a part of wanting to be a bird to fly.
Mm.
And that was, a lot of the masks I was wearing in my work, and I had an amazing time playing with mask and persona and identity. And I think I also exhausted myself and didn't know myself was completely scattered, that I was really struggling with a core sense of self. So that goes back to that solar plexus. And then in asking and changing my name to Heraclitus and going out to the woods to find myself, I actually thought I might just go off the grid and go live in the woods.
And so for a year, you lived in the mountains.
I lived in the mountains.
Tennessee.
Tennessee and Vermont.
Radical Fairies Short Mountain Sanctuary.
I did. I lived up there for about 4.5 months, and I also lived in Vermont.
Were you in the winter at any of these times in the
woods?
I was
in the winter in Tennessee.
That's hard.
I couldn't do it.
For people who don't know the geography of the region, you go down this dirt road on a mountain.
Twisty roads.
And so once it gets iced over or snowed over, you're stuck there until it thaws out.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you got your food or whatever, if you need something from the town, you have to hike it up.
Right, I know. But I love that testosterone, so I was like running up that mountain all the time. But, you know, I actually missed a lot of my emotions changed, so I missed my emotions. Because I felt like being on testosterone was like always being an arrow. And it really changed my posture, and I was just like running up that hill, running up the mountain, just really fast, just to get to the top, to look around. And that starts to become that kind of like bird behavior.
Where you wanted to sort of transcend.
I wanted to transcend.
Gravity.
I wanted to. I also.
Defy gravity.
I wanted to do that, and then I wanted to, well, I mean, then I finally figured out how to do it. You can just change yourself. That's all. Mm. You can change yourself.
What do you mean by changing?
You can do a bunch of therapy, but you can just change yourself. Yeah. You can change
the way you see things.
Change the way you think about everything you're experiencing. And then maybe I'm also synesthetic, so that's really important to me. It's how I experience my reality through all my senses.
You were talking about the path of five in terms of connecting with relationships. And I really like this.
I know. I really think, oh, that's sweet.
It was that for you, it's sometimes hard to connect with somebody. And this is tied to this, I guess, a trope that RuPaul likes to say. If you can't love yourself,
you can't. Yeah.
How the hell are you going to love somebody else?
Yeah.
Which is great on the surface, right? You're saying it's like, it's really important to take care of yourself in order to be able to give to somebody else or to connect with somebody else. The dark side of that is saying, if you are not healing yourself, or if you have any self-doubt or self-hatred,
right,
then you're not worthy of love.
Right, totally.
And everybody's worthy of love by virtue of being human.
Right.
But the path of five is something sort of different.
Yeah.
You're saying that there's five attributes for you that you're seeking out in yourself and in another partner.
Yep.
What are those?
Okay, yeah. So a little bit about that. Yeah, and then a little bit about that journey towards like loving and accepting the self. Was informed by hating the self, totally hating the self, being self-destructive, and then also not trusting other people and not trusting the world. So actually, I've come a long way. I'm really, really happy that I'm here, actually loving myself, loving the world, and loving other people.
You love to be here.
But I also found myself in some really I was really unhappy in codependent relationships where I was definitely attracting people who also did not like the world or like themselves.
And you saw relationships as a drug.
Or sex, too.
Sure.
For sure. And I cut myself off from all of that because now I have that's my 5-point system. So the first one is finding someone sexually attractive. That's one. And two, it's how, it's the energy they give off. And three is...
So the non-physical attributes, like the...
It's just that stuff.
The personality, their viewpoint.
Yeah, and it's the energy. And I'm an energy worker, so I'm either attracted to energy or not attracted to energy. And the energy people give off is really important. It actually will make them more attractive. It's their energy. Imagine that.
Without a doubt.
Right? So, and then the third thing was how they treat other people. So I would be with people who gave great energy. Let you take that one. And then also, you know, were attractive, but I didn't like the way they talked about their mom, or I didn't like the way that they treated the waiter, or I don't like, you know, just their negativity about the world.
What did I just tell you? I'm going to say, that's the worst things you can say. Like I said before.
Hmm.
Well, actually, it's blah, blah, blah. Those are like trigger words. You'll never win anybody over if you say, like I said before.
Like I said before.
Actually, those are like...
Well, it's a way to remind you of you're not paying attention to me, so I want you to pay attention to me now, Mr. Fausto Fernos.
Right.
Actually.
Actually is one of my favorite words. I love that word.
So but, what's number four?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I get so...
One, let's go over. Let's see if I got this. Yeah. One, you're hot for somebody.
Right.
Two, you're hot for them because they have great energy.
Great energy.
Three, you get even hotter for them because they treat other people well.
Wow. Kindness. Yes.
Right?
And four. That means other people, birds, plants,
nature,
rocks,
yeah.
trees,
life.
Dogs. Yeah. Everyone.
Children.
Yeah. Strangers on the street they smile to. That kind of thing. So then four is, do they love themselves?
That's how do you know if they love themselves?
How they treat themselves, how they treat other people, how they treat the world, and if they're true
forgive
to themselves. If they're true to themselves, then they're on their path, which is five. People who are on their path.
So the path.
The path is who you're meant to be, what you're meant to be doing, and doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So not necessarily.
They're fulfilling themselves.
This is a lot to load on
Sorry.
Somebody because it's like you know that's.
But that's a lot yeah. to load onto well, me, and that's what I stepped into.
I'm just
if I can step into it, someone else has got to step into it.
I just want somebody to swipe right on my Tinder profile.
So I
here.
Actually I was rarely lonely, and then yeah. I think I was chasing tail. I was chasing hotness, and I was chasing sex, and I was chasing love. And I was chasing people to be addicted and codependent to me. And then I realized, no, I need to confront my profound loneliness and be okay with it and okay with me. So then on that journey, I realized I need to be on my path and make my own dreams come true. Well, that's what I'm doing, and that's five. That's the language of five. That's five.
Because you're doing what you need to do, and when you're doing what you need to do, you're going to find somebody else that's doing what they're doing.
Or not even find. It's like, I won't even have to look.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be there, and if they're on their path, they'll be in five, so there'll be some five going on, five exchange. I want to meet people who are on their path.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you say?
People don't know what they're doing. I'm like, what do you? Well, get out there and mm-hmm. do some things.
But sometimes, like the path,
get out there.
The path with a capital P and the T. You know, part
oh,
of
yeah.
it is sometimes the path is just you know,
living
brushing
your, life.
Your teeth,
yeah,
exercising, being happy.
Right.
And that's the end.
It can be. So you're saying it can be mundane.
Yeah, this idea of desire of greatness and history is a very toxic Western way of looking at life.
I know. Which
my
is what,
legacy,
yeah.
you know, and it
right,
inspires
right, right.
Pack ratting. Like human beings, we are evolved from animals that were pack rats.
Right.
So a survival mechanism for us is to never
to
let
hoard.
Go to hoard,
toward,
to never
yeah.
let go of feelings and ideas and matter and materials and people.
Right.
And things. And sometimes it's like, you know, and it's interestingly that a lot of Eastern philosophies are all about cutting those things off to be able to see things simple.
Wow.
And it's, you know, as a designer, the best thing you can do if you're asking somebody to make a decision with clear thought is to not clutter the decision making process. And so when I tell people about like, what is your journey? What, you know, if you want to be a happy person, you got to understand what you like to do. And sometimes what you like to do is, you know, do nothing. And that's
well,
okay.
Well, that's a something. Like when I say path, it could be that your path is just to. Just to have a great garden.
Yeah.
It's just your garden. Like when I say path,
to
I
make
mean,
something as opposed to consume something.
And it's actually really to make your life what you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people have dreams and then they get bitter that the dreams never happened, but they also never worked on the dreams. Mm-hmm. They actually have to believe that this world is magical and that you could actually have the life you want to live.
If you want to look like an athlete, you have to live like an athlete.
And that's basically it.
And living like an athlete sucks. Even athletes
right.
will tell you that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. All the athletes are like, I can't wait to get a pizza in me. They're like, that's all their Instagram posts are, you know? They're all like, oh, man, Christmas is here. I can't wait to pig out on food. You know?
Although some people, we really enjoy creating systems and structures because then that's really where we get to have, again, going back to that metaphysical experience mm-hmm. of reality, like the athlete I actually really relate to because they're practicing every day for an event. There is no event in my life. It's the every day, but practicing every day as though every day is the event.
That's the path.
That's the path. There we go. There's
and that's something
path.
That, like, you and I learned early on. You know, we come from an artistic tradition, especially, you know, through the performance art school.
Yeah.
And teachers like Linda Montano.
Oh, I love Linda Montano.
Is the
work.
Idea, you know, and this sort of laid the foundation for some of the greatest ideas in the world and some of the worst ideas in the world. Reality television wouldn't be where it is today if we didn't see that creativity and art can be synonymous with the process of living your life.
Right.
And, you know, one of the New Year's resolutions that I'd like to put out there for our audience, and this is something that we're with our World of Fun initiative that's just around the corner, is create a space and a discussion for people to cultivate creativity in their everyday lives.
Oh, I love that.
And to have a feeling, and part of it is because I want that for myself, too.
Absolutely.
Like, we've been doing this podcast for 15, it'll be 15
It'll be our 15th
years.
Season. Can you believe that?
Oh, my God. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And you were very much a big part of that very beginning.
Oh, that, and what a coincidence, or no coincidence, that I'm back around. I'm back from living in the woods.
You're back from the woods. And
I found myself, and that what I found is that you're always finding yourself.
Yeah.
You're always becoming.
Was that the biggest revelation?
Oh, my God. I had so many lessons. I mean, I called in. I was following Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey. Called
for
it the Adventure.
Who don't know about this,
oh, wow.
So Joseph Campbell is a, you know, he's a humanities professor who sort of looked at a lot of mythology and wrote a book called the I'm blanking out on the title, the Hero's
The Hero's Journey.
But it was something else, but
something about myths or something.
Yeah, The Power of Myths. Yeah.
Power of Myths.
And it was just a PBS series.
Oh my God, so
everybody
good.
Loved it and a very young filmmaker fell in love with the series named George Lucas.
There
and he created a film called based on his
based
book
did.
And his work called Star Wars.
Off of the Hero's Journey, which is in, it's in the Odyssey.
And the Odyssey and Odysseus. And the core idea is that growth comes from the hero being taken into the underworld and going through different trials.
Right.
And coming out the other side transformed.
Right.
And that all knowledge, but also history and information and storytelling to some degree follows this archetype because as human beings, this is how we learn.
Right.
Through and the dark side of all this, which is another book that is very influential to a lot of artists like ourselves, is The Artist's Way, which is this which challenges that idea that to be a successful artist, to be a creative person, is to suffer.
Right. And I want to eradicate that, actually.
So those two things are like that's at odds with each other.
Yeah,
but
I want
to. You need some kind of conflict, don't you?
Well, actually, you know what's so interesting is that. So I went on the Hero's Adventure, the Hero's Journey. There's the call to adventure. The allies appeared. The supernatural world just opened up. There I am. And there I'm not, basically, in the spirit world, not who I am. And. Then the trials and tribulations happen, which are force the hero to change and to grow. Mm-hmm. And in my situation, I thought, wow, this is about living in the mountain. This is about living with nature. Or this is about going into my past trauma and just pulling it out and knowing everything and understanding everything. What ended up happening is I had to confront my dad. So my hero's journey took a kind of a turn. It was really about healing a relationship, which I mean, I haven't even healed it really, but beginning to see patterns in my family of alcoholism and addiction and depression. And so the dark night of the soul, where you look at yourself and you go, okay, you've made these mistakes, but you still love yourself and you don't want to suffer. And so my biggest trial was seeing my dad suffer and realizing I had to change things inside. So even though it was like I'm taking testosterone and I'm getting muscle and my face is changing, my voice is lowering, and I'm on this hero's adventure, maybe I'm going to fall in love with some magical femme witch in the mountain. None of that. That was all fantasy. That didn't happen.
Were you hoping that would happen?
Totally crushed. When I was on testosterone, I had a crush on every single person on the mountain. It was kind of embarrassing, and it was like too many boners. It was really, really hard. But what I thought I was going to be doing all this sexual work, instead it was a family. It was a family. It was a dysfunctional family cord that needed to be cut, and the only way it could be cut was. And so that's the hero of my own story. So now I'm in the. I thought I was going to be making this incredible film all about living in nature. It's not at all. The video is Heraclitus is. It's a walkabout. It's a maze. It's like the hero goes on this walk in nature. And really, it's about confronting the parts of myself I didn't like, and then eventually being okay with that.
What did you learn most about this journey? I mean, you know, at the end, you're transformed, and part of me is like, I feel like you're the same person we've always known.
Of course. Although...
How are you transformed? Besides, you have a fabulous new haircut.
I think I'm transformed in that I like myself, I like the world, and I trust people. I think I'm also transformed in that I have, I'm making sense of past work and even times where I wanted to be the tortured artist because that's actually what a successful artist is. And there was even a time where I was working in hospice and in the nursing homes where I was like, I don't want to be an artist at all. I think it's selfish and egotistical. Yeah. I'd rather help people transition to the other side. I'd rather help people who are really suffering with my warm energy and my creativity. That's the best use of it. What I ended up discovering was, no, the best use of my creative energy is to look at what I need as a person. So going back to that, like, self-care as an art form, is what do I need as a person? Then I'm going to make the art I'm meant to make. So that's not necessarily making the best art. It's actually not about being a genius or being a super talented person, but it's actually about what's best for me is going to bloom the best, you know, it's bloom the garden or bloom the boon, the elixir of life that the hero brings back to the tribe or to the community is actually, in my case, it's self-care. It's taking care of yourself. That's how you're going to make the art you want to make. My art has taken me on a journey to self-care.
Let's talk about your orgasms.
Yeah, let's talk about those.
you know, there's a lot of ideas that, you know, certainly like someone like Annie Sprinkle says that an orgasm is also a spell, a prayer. And
I love her.
The energy and the mindset that you put out when you're coming.
Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger's talked about this. It's like, I have the greatest life. Gym, I'm coming at the gym. On stage, I'm coming on stage. At home, I'm coming in bed. It's great.
That's so nice.
And this idea of the orgasm as this powerful tool to bring in
it's very powerful.
Joy, peace, contentment. Yeah. Mark, you talk a lot about the getting the poison out.
I thought
we were talking about here's orgasms.
Well, I'll talk about getting the poison out.
Why don't you add something to the conversation? Because you're always saying that, like, you have this idea that, you know, sexual release is really important thing to have in your everyday life.
Well, without a doubt. I mean, we all want to be hugged and kissed and caressed. It produces oxytocin. And that's something that's very healing. So you get a lot of energy from that kind of stuff. You know, and it depends. You know, sex can be very healing, but also sometimes it can take a lot out of you.
Oh, sure.
You know,
it
and it's not necessarily like a great experience.
It's like at the gym. You work it hard. Work hard.
God, coming in the gym, coming on the stage. So for you, you know, having gone through the experience where you were a year in testosterone replacement therapy, and as a person who was assigned female at birth, now you're sort of seeing things from the lens of someone with higher testosterone levels.
Yeah, and I really
and your sexuality.
Transitioning really was an inside journey. Because everyone wants it to be the outsides changing. I had no idea how much the insides were going to change for me. So it was something that all along I really wanted for myself. I never thought that I could do that. So I think I was a little tortured inside about
I
that.
I feel now, knowing you, because I've known you now, you know, 15 years, because I probably met you in, what, 2003, is you seem like a much more confident person.
Yeah.
And a person who isn't looking for approval or to be liked, even.
Oh, I really was needy. Heather. I love you, Heather, but
I think that this is the difference. Like the difference that I see is that you before with your eyes, you used to kind of look for approval. Do you like this? Is this okay? That kind of thing.
And now I don't care.
This is who I am. And this is
I look
what
for
I have
the birds.
Offer.
I listen to the birds.
But are you gonna make gingerbread cookie gingerbread house cookie dresses?
Oh,
that's what
probably
I
probably not. Well, I mean,
I think
that confidence was needed because the world doesn't need. Okay, so the world doesn't need women to be full of so much insecurity and self-doubt about their own talent that they don't birth the work they're meant to work. I think I was on that journey. I didn't realize how much I wanted to transition until I started transitioning. Now I don't identify as a woman. I identify as non-binary. Gender to me is just fluid. It's just I'm more of a two-spirit. I'm
like
more
you said,
of
it's
a,
complex, right?
It's complex.
Do you see it as as an artistic medium, like clay?
Gender?
I do. And I also think that
so it's definitely not something that's fixed for you.
No, it's not fixed. And it's a daily moment by moment thing that's happening for me. And, you know, I've even had so going back to orgasms, what I think is so amazing about female orgasm is the fact that it can travel all over the body and it's not localized. And then with female orgasm, It's really about, you know, fields and reaching these fields and then these plateaus. And what ended up happening on testosterone is I went from having all these plateaus and fields to just being like, I need to come. You know, just like this, just escalator.
You describe it like an arrow.
It was an arrow. It was an escalator. And sometimes those crushes on someone's voice were like maddening. So I did feel this huge responsibility on testosterone. It was intense to have so many graphic images of naked bodies just like appear in your mind just when you don't want them.
That didn't happen before.
No, that didn't happen. And I really considered myself a pretty, you know, erotic female for sure, like being a sex worker. And making a lot of like autoerotic porn work, I felt sexuality was like a medium I worked with. There was this hyper masculine, super speedy, shift. It was like a paradigm shift. And I missed my female orgasms. I missed the complexity of that. At the same time, in my sex work, I was trying to teach men how to have multiple orgasms and have more female orgasms, which is also possible through prostate. And then I felt when I transitioned, I really missed emotional connection with people, even though I was so like fueled and throbbing. So I became more asexual. I think that was part of the hero's journey, too. And I think it's, you know, sometimes the very thing that you're afraid of happening is the very thing that's going to happen, and you're supposed to walk through that.
Now, you've decided to go off the tee.
Yeah, I've been off the tee.
What is it like now?
I feel like I'm just still on the tee.
Oh, really? So, like, once you kind of got rewired by the tee?
I'm totally rewired. I had, like, a teenager time. You know, I had pimples, just like I was a teenager.
Did you pop them?
I did not do that, but that's, yeah.
Did you have magazines that you snuck underneath the mattress and
no,
didn't watch your mom to look at?
No, it wasn't like that. The texture of my skin changed. That was a dramatic thing. You know, everything changed. You know, everything changed and my relationship to it, which also means that transitioning for me was a real inside job. So when I stopped hormone replacement therapy, I had already had that paradigm shift that I just continued. So I'm still on testosterone as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that just is how it feels now that I know what is what.
Would you consider going back?
I would, except what I ended up starting to lose my hairline. I started to go bald, and I was like, oh, oh my. I was going to get hair like my brother.
That's a gender fuck right there.
Hair with like my dad. And I was like, oh, no, that's good. I'm good. Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, as I understand, some hair loss is related
male
to...
male pattern baldness, yeah.
It's not necessarily related to testosterone. It's also part of the estrogen levels in your body.
Yeah, so that and...
I'm not a scientist.
It's a certain type of testosterone, DEAH or something like that.
So I'm in menopause, and I've been in menopause for a couple of years. So actually, when I started transitioning, I was in menopause, so I didn't have that much estrogen to begin with, which was kind of cute. So I really got to feel that tea. but that means that there's been a shift. And I do still really consider myself to be on tea, even though I'm not, because of all the changes.
Because you already have testosterone in you.
I have testosterone now, yeah. And it is circulating. Mm-hmm. You know,
and
I still smell like I have testosterone.
What's testosterone smell like?
Well, you know what I mean. Like I smell
like
teenage
dude.
Boys' locker room.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, real fresh, real fresh. Which is an interesting experience to be in transitioning, where you're like, oh, these are the smells that would attract me, and here now I'm smelling like that. At the same time, I've always been attracted to women too. And to find that I was attracted to men and women's bodies in a very different way on testosterone has been really interesting.
Because they say women have more of an emotional connection to people,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
That's where the sexual attraction comes from.
Right, absolutely, absolutely.
Whereas men, it's like visual.
Visual.
We want to see
naked bodies.
We want the dick pics.
Just
there
naked
bodies.
There
have been times where I'm like, I can't, you know, I want to come.
Lady bone has gone wild.
I want to come. I can't come.
Right. There's the, oh, I'm going to come.
Desperately flipping through my cell phone on Instagram for the right photo of a guy.
Right.
So I can ejaculate to it.
See, and I was basically surrounded by all these beautiful queers. And I just would hear someone's voice, or I would just see someone walking in the forest, and my mind would immediately just have them naked. I'd be smelling their ass. Like, I was like, wow, that's a lot. Thank you. Testosterone. Just flooded. It's pretty amazing.
What would you like the world to know about your experience in all this? What's the most important thing to take away from here?
Transitioning or the hero's journey? You're just saying all of it, really, like
all of it. Yeah, like, you know, because you've gone through this extraordinary, this journey to be here. Literally, that's now your name.
Yeah, I like that. It really has been an extraordinary journey to be in the moment. I think that is the takeaway that I want everyone to realize, that no matter what painful journey or struggle that they're on, that the most important thing is just to be in the moment.
And roared up. I'm just kidding.
No, to be in the moment.
Be in the moment.
And that the moment's actually a lot more psychedelic and metaphysical. That being in one moment is a pretty powerful thing.
It's everything.
It's everything.
It's everything.
Heraclitus here, Vernon. Mix Vernon.
Yeah.
Sure. Mix a lot. We're having a lot of fun with gender pronouns.
It's Zer.
Zer, yeah, mix a lot.
My gender pronoun is XE, but it's pronounced Z. Neither he nor she. XE. It's XE or
and
Zer.
With the X with your hands.
XE with the hands, yeah. And it's Zer. So XIR.
So if Marvel Comics
Zer
wanted. Because Marvel
Zer
Comics certainly borrows a lot of the LGBT struggles as metaphors for their superhero series in X-Men, if they wanted to sort of future-proof it, what would you rename X-Men into? Like, X-They?
No, it'd be
it's definitely going to be a crow. It's a crow that can see the future but still decides to help everyone in the here and now.
So crows are very helpful.
Yeah.
There was a Aesop's fable about the crow. Do you know what that story is?
No, will you remind me again?
Sure. It's basically the crow was like looking at the glass and was dying of thirst.
Right.
And it couldn't reach to the bottom of the glass.
Right.
And I was like, what am I going to do?
Right.
I'm going to die.
Right.
There's no more water to be found. You know, these fables are always in a perfect
It's always way. Dire straits.
Sure.
So the crow figured out that it could, it threw a pebble in, yep. but still the pebble wasn't enough.
Right.
But after putting pebble after, after pebble, the water rose all the way to the top of the glass.
Yeah.
And the crow was able to take a drink and save its life.
Yep.
And that's the metaphor to take away from here is that sometimes, you know, that change and this journey and building something is not something that's instantaneously.
No, it
requires a lot of small little steps to get to one big result.
Right. Which is only just one sip of water.
One sip of water that'll save your life.
That's beautiful.
Oh. I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up at feastoffun.com/plus.
Oh, please do.
We also have t-shirts for sale at our store at feastoffun.com/store. They make great Christmas presents.
You were a very close friends with our dearly departed, one of the world's most important drag queens, Victoria Lamar, who a lot of people don't know. She was one of the first drag queens, if not the first drag queen,
she probably
on YouTube.
She inspired, she doesn't know it, but my YouTube residency where I made a video every day on YouTube in 2011 on YouTube Pink Anxiety was inspired by her.
The Victoria
That's,
Lamar Show.
I'm sending
show.
That back up back to you. Thank you.
The Victoria Lamar Show was this idea. So Victoria Lamar was dying from AIDS, from advanced, capital A-I-D-S in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And she was a regular guest on the early days of this podcast. And the listeners of the show said, let's get together and raise some money to buy her flowers in the hospital. Mm. Instead, it was one of the earliest crowdfunded things on the internet. Mm. They instead figured out that we could raise enough money to buy her an iMac, a computer. And with it, they got an EyeSight camera, and she started video blogging. Mm. And so I edited some of that stuff together, and we put it up on iTunes as a video podcast. And then later on YouTube, and one of the first things we ever posted on YouTube was the Victoria Lamar Show. Hi, this is Victoria Lamar.
Aww.
And she inspired another drag queen by the name of Daphne Dumont to do a video about fighting for the crown.
I did not know that.
She was your drag mother, Mark.
She was my drag mom. She put me in drag and we did a little video together, and her poor mother was in the background in bed. And at the time, we didn't know her. She was like, my arm hurts. Well, she had a broken arm.
She had broken her arm, but she had not gone to the hospital yet.
Yes.
So if you're out there making the video, she's like,
right.
Matthew. Sorry to dad name. But is it that? She's like, Matthew, my arm hurts. and you guys were like a drag.
Sure.
And you're like, you know, when you're drag, you're like, kind of like you're on drugs, you're like heightened.
Okay, good.
You know, you're like,
I like that.
And so Mark is turning to Victoria and is like, do you want that crown? Do you want that crown? I want that crown. And then she pulls out a knife. And I think I kill her.
She had it coming.
Oh, no.
She had it coming. She said I looked like trash.
Yeah.
Well, she was like a philosopher. Victoria Lamar was a philosopher. And I tend to get into sort of Socrates, Plato relationships with people where they're just fabulous and I just want to listen to them. Please tell me everything you know.
So I want to start doing a podcast series based on several important books. One of them is The Artist's Way, but also Velvet Rage.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of internalized transphobia, homophobia, and and how not to be a bitter bitch.
How not to be. Ooh, soften up.
Yes. How to invite love and compassion and creativity into your world.
And so prostate massage.
Coming in 2019 to Feast of Fun.
And well, all right.
Sounds amazing.
Will you come on back on the show and talk about that stuff?
Definitely talk about the artist way, because my life changed because of the artist way. From that recovery program, the artist way that I was doing. And I started taking myself on the artist dates. I still do.
Yeah, and just for people who are sort of like scratching their heads wondering, I talk about the artist way as, some people who go to recovery, they're addicted to drugs, alcohol, mm-hmm. gambling, sex, mm-hmm. codependency.
Or all of them.
Or all of the above. Yeah. For artists, sometimes we're addicted to procrastination.
Sure.
And not pursuing what we're supposed to be doing. And I just want to leave the listeners with this. You had this really wonderful idea of how to make art in a really creative way, in a healthy way, mm-hmm. and not dysfunctional. Is that sometimes you don't need to stay up till 3 a.m. mm-hmm. doing a painting.
No.
What did you say?
You need to go to bed.
You need to go to bed.
Well, I wrote my thesis, my second master's in art therapy, was a thesis about self-care. So I did have an addictive relationship with my work. Yeah. I was using it like a drug. You can't have that shit. After performing, for sure.
Sure.
Making a video every day? It's a little manic. But what now, it's I check in with myself and I ask myself what I need. And it may be that I need a dance performance. It may be that I need to write a poem. It may be I need to go to bed, or I need a massage, or I need to meditate, or I need to paint. So it's, what do I need? And it allow not the art to sort of rule my life, but the other way around.
To make the art an enhancement to your life.
A supplement, as Nietzsche says. Art should be the metaphysical, art is the metaphysical supplement to reality. You know me and those metaphysical supplements.
I take them 3 times a day, honey. Heraclitus here, Vernon. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
People can get in touch with you best ways through Instagram or Facebook.
Instagram, I'm Heraclitus. And on Facebook, I'm Heraclitus. So you can find me. Also, my website is Heraclitus.com. Vimeo is sexual theory practice. And then my other Vimeo is Heraclitus. And if you're really interested in that crazy YouTube, it's YouTube Pink Anxiety. YouTube.com.
Heraclitus. Heraclitus.
Oh my God. Heraclitus. Thank you, Faustos and Mark. What a pleasure. And Jesse is here.
Aww, he's here.
Yeah. This has been a real live wire, because I think the last time was my daughter was on your podcast.
Your daughter was on. And
she was 8 at the time?
And the like downstairs that. Neighbors were furious.
Oh, really?
You're like, you have a child in the apartment walking around.
They were terrible.
Oh, well, she, yeah.
They're advertising executives.
Oh, my God. Well, we'll have to get her back on.
Yeah.
Get For her sure. back on.
Thank you so much, here.
Thank you.
Thank you, here.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.